We had some people that were interested and called us about it. We pushed it out the same way we did the last time. And but we got no responses. Zero.
So how do you send it out? Just curious.
We had it on the web, but that's easy. But Bob
Galvin,
the planner, sent it out to a series of publications and developers he knew in that field. So, and that was then filtered out. Because he dealt with that a lot in Westchester, so he had a lot of different contacts.
Yeah, we sent it out to the same people that we sent it to the last time. Put it in the same lists and things that we did the last time. I'm not sure we did enough. We may have done it for the wrong stuff. So we'd love to hear from the two of you, from your expertise in real estate and in the hospitality industry, what do you think we should do? And or differently, do you have any advice for us, have any thoughts on it? I'm hearing things like, you have too many restaurants already, why do you want to put a restaurant down there now? And just, you know, it's all over the map right now because we didn't get any responses.
I mean, before we get into the hospitality end of it, whether there should be a restaurant or not, just a more fundamental question and maybe exposure of where it went or didn't go. What were the parameters of the RFP in terms of, is it a long-term lease? It was.
It's not a lease, it's a license agreement. So.
Well, I think that in and of itself
is difficult. But I don't think we can lease the land because it's park. It's parkland. It's our land.
And you can't lease parkland?
No, by law, I don't think we can lease parkland.
I know you're alienating parkland is different than leasing.
I wish Walter was here. But we went through this discussion when we were going to put it out the first time when Bartaco came in. And it was the same thing because we owned it and it was designated parkland in the waterfront or whatever. We could not lease it. We could only do a license.
It's very hard to finance a license.
As the operator?
If you're a lender and you have collateral, you know, which is the business and the building and everything else, or you want to do a long-term lending on the property like that, with a license, it's much more cancelable, and so you don't have the
It's hard to there's no guarantees in it. License agreement, you can get the agreement today and tomorrow we can say we don't want it.
Yeah,
really?
So who wants to? Well, that's why if you have, for example...
I'm just sort of a fly on the wall.
That's great, but come on. Okay. Come on.
When you have the, where Millbrook owns that center over there, so you have the construction clause in there, so that's why you didn't get anybody in there, because who is going to go and spend, $150,000 to outfit a store when you get a 60-day notice that tells you you're out of there?
Right.
So you can't finance it because who wants the land? You can't amortize anything on it. There's got to be some other vehicle that would allow you to provide some security for somebody to come in and make the investment to build that place.
And actually on that note as well, when you're dealing with the license as an operator, and this space in particular, I think everyone's going to want to ask, like, what's the incentive for us to be there? Typically you get a vanilla box delivery of a space, and then they can, plug it in with whatever else they need. Typically it's like FF&E that the operator comes in and spends whatever. A million bucks. But it's essentially just a space that they can move into. That's not really the situation here. I think unless something changed, they're building from the foundation up, really, right? So it's a huge investment for someone to come in.
But even if we, not Gabe, we did a building, is that license agreement still a problem?
Well, it's easier to the point of a business going in there, because most restaurants and other hospitality spaces are delivered in a vanilla box.
Okay.
There's a floor, there's power, there's the walls, you know, you can configure the ceiling the way you want. But, and so you literally plug in what you need to do and do your own furniture, fixtures, and equipment, and decoration, and all that other stuff. And, but over here, you're asking somebody who would need no less than 20 years to amortize a building like that. And the idea that you could be told, get out of the building.
The parameters were longer than that. It was like 20 to 50 year parameter.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but as a lease, you could finance, the longer term the lease, the easier it is to finance the lease.
Or license agreements, doesn't matter.
No, because what's...
Yeah, because you can get pull them out.
I'm going to lend you $5 million to build the building and to operate the greatest restaurant in the world. Mm-hmm. And he does operate the greatest restaurant in the world. And Joe Blow gets elected here and says, get out. And what does he tell the bank? That's the problem. There's no security for the bank, for the lender, for somebody that wants to do that. I think it's a structural issue. I don't think it's a location issue. And I don't even think it's a, the market will drive what that place will be. Not some yenta in NIAC saying we have too much of this or not enough of that. The market will tell you what it needs to be.
And that's basically what I've been saying the whole time.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, maybe it needs to be the trailhead for some, for something else. Or maybe it needs to be a service center. And maybe it needs to be something, but it's not what somebody on, bending an elbow at Prohibition tells you it should be. It should be what the market tells you it needs to be. But so the problem is, it's a structural issue. How do you get somebody to advance the investment? And money, by the way, is cheap today. It's very cheap. Mm. And the banks are, and those people that are looking to lend are really trying to push money out. So you've got a good environment to do it at a great location. But how do you secure that? How do you know you could amortize
that? So what if we could figure out a way to secure, the village doesn't have the money to build a building down there, but what if we could figure out a way to secure the funding for the building and then build that into the lease payments? So we get the funding to have the building, the vanilla box, built. And then we put that cost that we have to pay back to the lenders as the lease payment. And then on top of that, you have to pay us blah, blah, blah. Is that more of an incentive? I don't even know if we can do that. I'm just trying to brainstorm. What are the possibilities for us?
Possibly. I mean, typically the license fees are like a percent rent, right? As a percentage of sales, so that's who knows what that could be. I mean, it could be a $20 million restaurant, it could be a $2 million restaurant. It's it all depends. So
we didn't do it that way. Ours was just a flat fee,
right?
To come to us, well, they could have come to us with the flat fee percentage of sales, or just a flat percentage.
What were you expecting as rent there?
We really didn't expect. I mean, it was $5,000 a month and plus taxes when the River Club was there. And I think Bar Taco was $45 a month.
I'm trying to remember.
So, I mean, it was like, oh my God, move in tomorrow. But they were willing to pay us $45,000 a month. Something like that, 45.
Yeah, they were going to do.
It was even more than that, and it escalated every year. But then when they had to do work on the building, we took money out. We gave them.
Their $45,000 a month is most likely a 10% rent on gross. So they're they're projecting like $4 or $5 million in top line sales there, which as a Bar Taco, that makes sense.
Okay.
So if you get an operator like that, that's operators want to keep their rent at 8 to 10%.
Right, and that still is very generous for. You know, starting there.
Yeah.
Well, I think we started. We started about 60.
I think it was even more.
It was more than 60.
Yeah, I mean,
we started higher. It ended up being down in the 45 to 50 range after we found out how much they had to do to that building. And then we gave them like 10 years of a break for 10 years to not have to pay for their investment in the property. And that's why I'm wondering if someone would want to do something like that with us.
Let's assume we built the building. Let's assume we built the box.
Yeah.
How do you make sure you built the right box? You know, who helps you with that?
A box there?
Yeah.
Would truly be a box. The box, in my estimation, from a real estate standpoint, would be a box with as many sliding opening doors as you could have. It would be four walls, all glass,
yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. high pitch ceiling glass to the extent that you can.
Like three stories,
you know, and
whatever was allowed by code.
I don't know that I'd go that high, but I would certainly make it, and that box should be a utilitarian box so that if you decided that was where we were going to, you know.
So that's a community center,
you would build it in such a way that utilities and everything else were all built in, everything was ready to go, so that you could change the floor.
We could figure that out just by talking with people. What is the normal load and stuff?
But I mean, you know,
all that stuff's there.
Yeah, I mean, it's all there.
But I mean, it's designated parkland, right?
Yeah.
It's a little late in the year now for it now because the budget's going to get cooked in another couple weeks.
Right.
But I would be asking Albany and the Parks Department and all those places for some kind of monies to do that, you know, to restore a park building, things of that nature. I mean, that's where, you know, the Rockland delegation could have gone up. I mean, it's a little late now because the budget's going to be adopted April 1. And I think the budget will get adopted once they figure out Medicaid redesign and do them. But you would want to get the Rockland delegation and some of the other folks to see what they had in terms of money to build something, you know.
They'd want something to support the Cuomo Bridge coming across, people with a first stop off coming up to have somewhere to go.
Well, the Cuomo Bridge put out quite a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
The bridge put out a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of money touched Nyack. But I think that I think you'd have to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't put out that kind of money, though.
I was just going to say,
it was like 100. We got like what? $500,000 from the bridge.
Yeah, but other organizations got it. When I say money touched NIAC, touched it through the other organizations that got it.
Yeah, right.
You know, yes. Pride got $250, yeah. NIAC Hospital got $250, mm-hmm. you know, you, there were several other organizations that got it. But I think you would want to see what monies were out there, you know, for the restoration. And there are some private foundations, you know, Rockefeller Harriman, Dyson, those kinds of places, Scenic Hudson, some of these places where you could do some matching monies, you know, turn around and get you somebody's $250,000, somebody's $500,000, somebody's $700,000. You turn around, you might be able to get a match from the state on some of that. Somebody should reach out to Lowy to see if there's any way that there's any appropriations that she can push through. She's got less than a year left, and she's chair of appropriations, to see if there's any money that could come through, you know, Department of Interior there because of the parks and whatnot.
Yeah, we did have, I had conversations with Carlucci and Jaffe and Ken, and there wasn't a lot of energy from them to push, because we tried to get money to do something similar, to re-add what was there, and there wasn't much interest. But maybe I just didn't push hard enough.
Well, maybe it doesn't have to be posited as a restaurant building that you're asking them to rehab, but more of a parks related money for parks conservation. I could see if someone wanted to spearhead it, they could get an amalgam of funds from DEC, state parks, figure out if there's any of the coastal sandy money around. I'm not talking about the repair money, but some of the community renewal money.
Right.
Or perhaps somebody in the governor's office can figure out if the dormitory authority or our state legislators could figure out, maybe the state dormitory authority could provide the kind of funding that was needed. And if the dormitory authority, was willing to put out the bonds for it, then you have some guaranteed payment for it. I gotta believe that some of those agencies might actually be able to have, maybe you don't have I'm using the expression that they have some kind of first lien, so that the payments always had to go back or
the dormitory group. I thought had money. They have a lot of money.
They have capital. A lot of places have capital money.
Yeah.
Does it through bonds, though, and they necessarily have the money. They have a lending authority.
Yeah, you just have to be able to secure. If I'm going to give you money to build a building for public purposes, yeah. And the public purpose may be you want a restaurant, maybe you want, I don't know. But I want to know that if I'm lending you the money, I've got some way in which to collect income to repay the debt. That's always, and the word license is just not a secure enough thing. A lease I can bank, a deed I can bank, a license is very tenuous.
Yeah, Walter and I talked about the possibility of what would it take for us to undesignate that parcel as parkland and make it just village property. Then what would happen?
We need to act at the legislature, the state legislature.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be done. Can be done because you're not taking, you're not demapping Hook Mountain. You're taking a piece like that and you're doing that. But
And the only thing, at least with that, is I know you usually have to dedicate an equal. I mean, it's such a small piece, so we probably could find, even though we have such little property. You usually have to dedicate an equally sized piece as parkland.
Yeah, I think we could find that, though. Any thoughts on how we market this in a different way?
I mean, I think...
Well, that's really all very good, excellent ideas.
I think the what you're doing is fine, the publications that you're publishing in, but I think, outreach to operators, known operators.
Like personal outreach.
Yeah. Is important too. Whether they're one-off restaurateurs or restaurant groups. I mean, I know that Peter Kelly's downsizing his group, really. But as far as local people, there's a ton of great restaurants on the other side of the river that start off as one restaurant and growing into different groups.
The group that might, only because they've done the waterfront hospitality, the Benuras on the Newburgh waterfront. And they're now doing the Poughkeepsie Grand Hotel, and they've got quite an operation. And
I know them very well.
And they understand how to do waterfront development. Should I tell Walter what you said about
him? Let's take a photo first.
Go ahead, I want to hear what I said.
I just want to get out. We can talk later.
But I always tell them how handsome he looks because of the beard.
I think that beard is up.
He's trying to look more like me every day. It's starting to get gray.
Elijah
doesn't look as good because his is black. Got to get to the point where it starts to get gray.
I'm getting a little gray over here.
You know, that's a group that you really might want to call in and say to them, hey, how do we do this? They are, you know, they've been on that waterfront in Newburgh, and that's a very tenuous place to operate.
And not only Poughkeepsie, too, the stuff they're doing in Poughkeepsie was very dicey as far as getting approvals.
But not only the neighborhood aspect of it, but from the standpoint of, you know, that waterfront has had a lot of shifting title, you know, not T-I-D-A-L, T-I-T-L-E issues, and, you know, Army Corps and all those other things. So these guys are sort of well-versed in that, and they...
The MTA is not up that far, but the train line through there, though. Was also a big
the CSX line, yes.
They had a big struggle to get those restaurants in with them back 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
So, you know, you might want to call them in with Mike Oates at the Hudson Valley Economic Development Corporation.
Yeah, and then Mike too.
You know, if there's anybody that can do any kind of connection, you know, bringing in Schumer and some of the others, who could do that? You need to know where the money is, and you take the combination of the two of those folks, and maybe the Benoras and stuff like that. You might be able to put together some kind of coalition of the willing to look at that. I could send you Mike Oates's contact.
Yeah, dude, I have his old one. I don't know if his cell phone's still the same. I've been out of that world for almost 6 years.
But I mean, that's a really good connection.
Yeah.
And it's a like.
Well, the Benoras, I haven't contacted them in a while.
They're on the HVEDC board.
Oh,
right.
So the Oates could bring them in.
Okay. Any other thoughts, sir?
No, I think there's in the whole scheme of the development that's happening down there, I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, that could help too, that whole.
I mean, look what they did over in the Sleepy Hollow riverfront side. That restaurant there is, the seafood place, is, you know, it's like this big, but it does really well, and it's really good.
Yeah, that whole area is jumping more than it was, that's for sure.
Yeah.
That was all run down.
Crazy.
There any groups over there that you would say, Don, you should probably make a phone call to?
I'll think about that. You know, there's a few restaurateurs there that I know are looking to grow.
The one guy on this side of the river that I did spend hours with talking about it is the guy that owns Cornelis.
Okay.
But they've had some pretty... There's three brothers that were involved. One brother died of a heart attack. The other one just has pancreatic cancer. So they've just been, I went down there last week and said, why didn't you guys bid on them? There was a bid.
What about the folks who own Pier 701? I don't know them, but like that's another sort of local.
Yeah, I've not heard the same sort of entrepreneurial stuff coming out of them that I have out of Cornetta's, but I'll try anyway.
You need somebody who has hospitality experience and development experience, because this is a ground-up development.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of that's the cart before the horse. And somebody who may be thinking that it's not only a restaurant, but it's a restaurant and, connect it into tourism, which there are dollars for, and some other things of that nature.
So Saran from Cornetta's runs that marina down there. And that's why he was interested in this, because part of the RFP had to do with running the marina as well.
Yeah, and then you have to look at park money, DEC money, maybe on the federal level, Interior Department money, coastal management money, all of those things, community renewal money. Those are the whole host of things, and sometimes you can put them together by matching them. A lot of times you can double match. You know, you can get money from the feds, but match it from the state. You might be able to match it from a local match or somewhere else, some regional match.
Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Meg.
Hi.
We're talking about 15 Burr Street. Not that you necessarily want to or not want to talk about that.
I don't know what 15 Burr Street
is. It's the old River Club.
River Club. The who?
River Club.
Oh, the River Club. Mm.
Yeah, oh.
Wasn't there a big, there was a big taco place going to be going in there, right?
That yeah, just they pulled out.
So is your plan still to keep the two together, the marina and that property, the, or are you exploring
the plan? The RFP did not necessarily tie them together. It gave the option of having them tied together. It was very loose in that way.
Mm-hmm. I have just, I'm going to read that, but I thought I'd give that if we can put it in the
draw.
Absolutely, thank you.
For some people, but others didn't want anything to do with it. So we left it in to see what, if anybody would come after. Walter, can you give us your, the first thing that was asked was...
There's just a few this year, I'm going to...
Is it a lease, is it a deed, and we said it has to be a license.
This one's my copy.
Because of the parkland and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the problems, was that it's park, and, you know, it's difficult for somebody to say, hey, I'm going to build a building, and at the end of the term of this agreement, I'm not going to own the building, which is why we tried to be very flexible with the term. You know, we're thinking...
Can it be a lease or it has to be a license?
It has to be a license, so it's a... I mean, the only other option, I guess, would be to subdivide off that piece and sell it. And that would be somebody who would have some skin in the game and own the property underneath the building. But it's a parkland, so we'd have to get an act of the state legislature to allow that. So we did a license agreement, similar to something like a Blue Hill Golf Course. They have a license for whatever concession they run up there.
Yeah, but it's built already.
But it's built already. And when we did the license agreement format with the building was there, it didn't turn off Bar Taco that much, but it turns out that the building had a lot less ability to be utilized in a redesign and refurbishment than we thought it did. And they thought it did even after doing some diligence. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, we tried to make it clear in the RFP, and I think it was pretty clear. Look, you know, we're looking at a 20-year license agreement, but make us an offer. You know, if you're going to build a building and you need 30 years, you need 35 years to make it work. Put it out there.
Yeah, but what were the guarantees that the license wasn't revocable? I mean, that's the problem.
Well, it's revocable, but you know, we had a lot of back and forth on any license by its nature is revocable, but you know, we had some. It had to be for cause, and you know, we had a process in there, and we're willing to work on that with anybody because it's clearly, you know, if you're going to build a building and you don't own the land under the building or the building, you got a problem with getting your money back unless you know you're going to be there for X period of time. Right. So that's a big you know, issue.
It's a big hurdle. I mean, I think that an operator's going to want to come in to. They'll invest, but only they'll make that large of an investment, which is, you know, build from
the
ground.
You gotta own either the building or the fee.
Yeah.
You gotta own one or the other.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, what's your collateral otherwise for a lender?
Yeah, a revocable agreement.
Right, exactly.
And municipalities, you know.
Yeah, no, it's, and they could change, as Paul mentioned, if somebody else gets elected, suddenly they want to change it. So while we have Paul and Henri here, does anybody have any other, I don't want to hold you folks up any longer just to ramble on and on, so is there anything else that, insights that we would like to get from them before we let them go?
I just did an e-introduction with you and Mike Oates.
Yes, if you do that, that'd be great.
Just did it. So you have it. Yeah, and you just reach out to him. He can get Benora and Tom Mulroy is also on his board, who's on the State Tourism Board. So maybe you can get some synergy.
It's not a giant site, but gee, you couldn't get any closer to the river.
Yeah.
I didn't get it. You texted it to me, or emailed it?
I emailed
it. Oh, okay. Come on, I'll get up to the email. You're younger than I am.
I sent it to your...
You did. Yeah.
Did you get it?
Yeah. Alan, did you have a question?
No, from what I caught, and I'm sorry, I was just getting back from Albany, so this sounds good. Thank you both for doing this.
Really appreciate all the information.
Yeah, appreciate your time. And I may lean on both of you when I get further into this and ask advice.
From an operator's point of view, I'd say the key is to figure out what the deal is that would make it attractive for an operator, and then, you know, go out to them and with the potential deal. You know, I think that the current scenario is just a little bit much to swallow.
Too squirrely.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one last thing before we conclude, and that is that to the extent that the entitlements can be pre-approved, that would be enormous. That if the village could approve a 10,000 square foot building, I don't know how big that place was. It is approved, a 10,000 square foot
footprint,
two-story building.
Right.
It is approved, CECA is done, everything is done, so that if someone were to come in, they're not spending the next year or 2 years going through the NIAC boards.
Right.
So you say, look, you know what it is. It's going to be a building. It's going to be the dimensions of the property. You can go to the lot line. It's got to be made of natural materials. And so then, you know, if somebody has to go before the architectural review board for aesthetics, that's one thing, but you don't have to go through planning, you don't have to go through zoning, you don't have to go through the village board. You should just have that thing sort of really ready, because that's, if someone turns around and says, what's the village doing to incentivize, right? So that's a very big incentive to go through the entitlement process and have it truly shovel ready.
Yeah.
That makes a big, big difference. I mean, there's not too much anybody can do if you say, this is, you know, I don't know how big it was. Well, there's a 5,000 square foot building, and it's two stories high, and it's got to be made of natural materials, and it's got to meet the flood standards, and that's it.
And we could get a white box approved, you know.
Yeah.
And then subject just to architectural.
But what a big incentive if you turn around and say, well, what incentive did the village offer? Oh, we gave you a shovel-ready thing. You don't need the lawyers or engineers and this. Here's the box.
Yeah.
This is what you can build.
Everything's done except for the ARB.
Right.
And all we have to do is get the money.
the village can apply to our own land use boards?
Well, the village will put the project up, but we have a policy in our village that we go through.
Right, okay.
Right, but the time that it's clicking now.
No, I wasn't arguing. I just legally, I didn't know how that works.
Yeah, do it on your own motion.
Yeah.
Put it through, and then it's then that's a real big incentive to turn around and say, oh wow, so if I agree with you, I can start building.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can pull a permit.
To do your stuff.
Right after ARB, and by the way, you could even say ARB won't be more than 3 meetings, or won't be more than 4 meetings, you know, that kind of thing. So somebody says, so how long? Well, we guarantee you're out of ARB in 6 months. You know, figuring whatever the filing times and everything are, so you could miss a month, or they could be
off. That's probably fair. Many of our projects have gone past that. Except the TZ Vista or something, probably.
Right, but what I'm saying is, someone says to themselves, oh, so that's my time. And they're going to need that time anyway to come in with their design. And
It's a pretty heavy lift, though, to get to that point. I mean, to get to a point where, I mean, does, isn't that going to take the village 2 years to do that?
I don't think so. I think, I bet we could use the...
To go through SECR and all the waterfront stuff and...
We could use the design from Bartaco. Mm-hmm. We could use the building footprint.
But did that get approved and everything for the water and the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it had all been approved. Mm-hmm. They were starting to do construction down there. Is it all
site plan? They took off the porch. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. the pilings didn't match. They couldn't hold up their building that they designed. So they dropped about, you know, $170,000 into design.
But definitely the collateral stuff they put out, the prints and the beautiful high gloss pamphlets and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, they made an investment. This is very helpful. Thank you very much for giving us your time. We appreciate it.
Maybe you even don't have to stay for the village board meeting.
Well,
we'd like you to, but keep it
going. That was the only incentive for coming
around. Don't do it, Paul.
The only incentive was that you didn't have to stay, or
that's right.
Oh, I misunderstood.
Have a good night.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Jim, you want to talk about the 25 mile per hour speed limit?
Yes, as part of the bike pedestrian study that was completed, one of the recommendations in this study was to make the village all streets 25 miles an hour. So I got into that process, and Walter clarified a couple of things that you can't have a village-wide speed limit of 25 miles an hour in New York State. You'd have to do it street by street, nor can you do areas. You couldn't take the whole north side and say, okay, we're going to make that go wrong. So from that first request or discussion point, we would have to find a few streets like Gedney. There are a couple that we would like to bring to you, but I have to do a little more research because I wasn't aware we couldn't do it village-wide. So on that first point, we'd like to discuss or bring to you some streets we would consider dropping. There are about 7 or 8 streets at Main, Broadway, Midland, 6th, Depew. There are already 25. Everything else, like Marion, is 30. You know, all the other side streets are 30 by law. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple we'd like to look at. So
Franklin. Franklin needs to be slowed down. Mm-hmm. Very much so.
Yeah, it may be already. I have to look.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying. Yeah.
No, you're, yeah.
Yeah, so there's some out there that we could add. The second, which we'd like to do now that we're doing all of the lights, so all of our traffic lights, the PSAP, that was done by TransDev, and make them note right on red. And I think that would be, if you go through, they're here and there, it's not village-wide. We have 7 or 9 lights that we have out there, traffic lights. All this is an effort to play into that study and mm-hmm. safety. Between what TransDev did, what the state did, and what we'll do with the PSAP, there's one light left that'll get covered in the sidewalk program on the south or on the Pew in Midland. So once you get to that point, you've covered all of your traffic lights. And one of the requests or suggestions in that was to make everything go right on red. So we'd like to do that combination. We're getting pretty far with our safety pedestrian safety efforts. But.
Which of our lights, the only light that I can think of that is not already no light on red is 5th and Midland?
Depending on where you go, the signs aren't there.
Oh, okay. Right. That's the, all the other, like the, all the ones downtown, I think, are no light on red, right?
It depends on which way.
Midland.
Yeah. No, I'm saying downtown, like this one here.
All right, so let me say we'll infill what's missing. That's what we're asking to do. So if half are there, we'd like to create the other half.
I mean, the only one I could imagine, I mean, I think in general, I totally think I support all of that. The only one I wonder about is that 5th and Midland. Is it really necessary? because there's very good sight lines there. And
for the Midlands?
Yeah.
It's probably the most significant one. Really? I think it's one of the more significant ones.
Okay.
All that work we did for the sidewalk, the buses with BOCES, the daycare, all of that, that's a very congested area.
Okay.
And at times, you know, there's times during the day where it gets really crazy between the buses and the hospital.
No, so I wasn't saying the traffic light necessary. I'm saying is the no right on red.
Yeah, that would help. Anything you can help to slow that down or get any of that cross traffic to stop, I think would be a very, very good thing to do.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that cross that street.
Yeah, it's a crazy intersection. Yeah, there's a lot going on. There's a lot of activity.
Okay.
It's all good activity, but it's busy.
So what do you need from us?
So my understanding, Walter, for the no right on red, I can move on that.
Yes.
It's not necessarily, is that, should we just put it in the form of a motion to do that? Doesn't necessarily mean a law change.
So let's just get a live action and put anybody else, and you of course can have more, but anybody else have any input?
No, I think it's great that you're looking at that because there's a lot of traffic, a lot of movement, and I think it's just a great idea.
And then give me a chance to review the streets.
All right, so let's move forward with no right.
I do have one question on the streets. So you can't set it for 25 village-wide, that's what the state said?
Correct, that's state law.
So if we're doing it street by street, is there like a percent? Can we, you know...
Yeah, it's funny that you say that.
Yeah.
Because that's where...
I mean, not really. I mean, but they do mention in the legal opinions issued by the comptroller on it that you can't do it, you know, sort of de facto.
Okay.
You know, so, but it doesn't say you can't do 90% of them. It just says you got to do them street by street, list them in your code.
And in theory, though, there's nothing that would stop us from, if we find that 60% of the streets in the village should be 25, we could do that.
I believe so.
Okay.
As long as we identify it and have a real, you know, we have the backup for it.
Great.
All right. Marie, any thoughts? All right, so move forward with the no right on red.
Yep.
And then with streets for us to review. We could just leave Botch and Dickinson at 30 and everybody else be at 25. Because then you can't go 30 on those streets anyway. So. Some people try.
Did that sign that we had put down on Gedney, the 25-mile thing, did you get any response, any input from anybody about that?
The only response I had was from the original woman who came to us
after?
See? Nothing afterwards.
That's what I'm saying, anything after?
Yeah. Eric, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm thinking of the girl with the boxes. But I let her know. Uh-huh. I did bring her in and let her know that we did notify the buildings.
Right.
You know, as JC had brought up in that one meeting, once you notify those folks who are probably 80% of the traffic going in and out of there. Then we did the sign. I'm trying to get it back for the southbound, but there's no space because you can't park on that side. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to figure out where to put it, and then we'll draw data from that. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be the probably the first one to hit with the 25 mile an hour. I will bring Gedney to you, and I think that'll help.
Just ask you a dumb question. You had it going one way. Can't you put it in the same spot going the other way? I mean, I know it's on the opposite side of the street, but if you got the room there, isn't there a...
I'm not sure if it can read if you have cross traffic. I'm not sure. Mike Ganizone, was explaining you really want it on the other side. I think
you really do, but if it poses, if we don't get the benefit from it, is there if we don't get the full benefit, is there any benefit from even... Again, putting it there.
It could skew the data.
Yeah.
What they're taking, because you have that cross traffic, which could break the rim.
All right.
While we're sort of on the speeding cars subject, whatever happened with the looking at a speed bump on Depew near Prospect?
Okay.
Between Prospect and Mill?
As we brought to you last time, Mike is trying to figure out how to do that without a speed bump, because of the angle or the grade of the road. In fact, they're trying to move away from speed bumps and speed humps. Mm-hmm. But there has to be some other signalization, and that's what he's looking at now. Way to slow it down.
Is he going to look at a possibility of a stop sign?
I'm not sure. Okay. He technically you're not. Speed signs really, stop signs are not meant for speed control.
Right. But if it's helpful or safe, if we think it's safety.
That intersection's really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the sight line. It's when I come down that way because of where I live, and if you go down into the village, there's almost always a car edging out.
Yeah.
And they cannot see cars coming east. Yeah. They just can't.
So that may be the justification.
Yeah.
So they have to literally get out in the road to see if someone's going to hit them when they're in the road.
Yeah.
So it really is not
coming out from Prospect, you mean?
Yeah, it really is not. Yeah. And there's a bush there that maybe, I don't know if that by our code should be cut back or not. It mm-hmm. might be, but that is the issue. Is there's a big bush right on the corner there, but you cannot see cars coming eastbound on the pew at Prospect. You cannot see.
I'll bring that back to him because he was kind of he's trying to figure out what to do in there with signage. Could possibly help, but it may be a stop sign. You may need a three-way.
I mean, maybe a dumb question, but even if a stop sign's not strictly necessary, if we think that it's going to be helpful and slow people down and make it a little easier, I mean, there's nothing that would stop us from deciding to put one in, right?
I don't believe the law prohibits it.
You know,
if the board felt it was, you know, with the right backup, you would have your traffic engineer back up.
Yeah, I would. I mean, we could get a lot of people asking us to put stop signs up all over the place. I think we need to have good rationale.
And that's what we're doing. Have that.
Not just because we think it's a good idea.
That's what I'm saying. You have that.
No, I get that. I guess what I'm saying
is we need to have the rationale.
Yeah, we need to think. I mean, I wouldn't think a stop sign there would be a good coming down and going up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, going up would be tough.
Even coming down. I mean, just.
I don't know. Yeah, there's a speed bump. There is a speed bump pretty close to that.
This is a similar discussion.
By Washington, yeah.
You know, 6th Avenue is a similar discussion.
Yeah.
Because of the grade. And
we do have a stop sign now right at the crest of that hill on 6th Avenue at Central.
No, coming down. It's the one coming down.
What do you think?
It was Franklin.
Oh, yeah. But Franklin, 6th Avenue is like twice the steepness of, or more of Depew there.
I'm just playing out a similar discussion.
From my perspective, we could sit here and talk about what we think is right, but I would like to see them tell us that this works and it's appropriate and safe and meets the goals of having safer streets and those things.
Okay.
I do want to listen, but I don't want to just react without thought about the process. So the only other speed bump was the one up at the housing authority. Has there been any?
I haven't had a chance to talk to her about it. I've asked her a couple of times because it's on housing property, but he gave us the two locations and that corner. Well, the corner is us, the Pine.
Okay. Because I know that
those lines in.
I read through all of the housing authority minutes.
Yep.
And that's come up two or three times.
Okay.
With us always being sort of inserted under bus while the bus goes by.
Yeah. I sent that up to her.
It would be good for us to follow up and make sure, and to give Donna the information for when she goes to the meetings.
Yeah. I'll send everything off to her.
Yeah.
Okay.
How are you, Melody?
I'm good. How are you, Ben?
I'm good. We have 10 more minutes before we officially start, so...